The second case for this morning, Sutton v. Barnhart. Ms. Hello.
May it please the court. I'm Heather Aloy on behalf of Appellant Rochelle Sutton. Regardless of the type of case at hand, the decision issued must be consistent with the adopted facts. Here it is not, and reversal is merited. The ALJ's decision also merits reversal due to an erroneous credibility finding and the ALJ's failure to consider Ms. Sutton's morbid obesity. The ALJ sent Ms. Sutton for a consultative psychiatric evaluation with Dr. Conran and adopted Dr. Conran's report. However, the ALJ's finding that the report establishes an ability to perform unskilled work is unsupported. According to the ALJ, quote, Dr. Conran's opinion and report show capacity for at least unskilled work, unquote, appendix at 8. However, Dr. Conran never stated or even suggested that Ms. Sutton could perform unskilled work. Dr. Conran found that Ms. Sutton was moderately limited due to her depression in 5 distinct areas: interacting appropriately with the public, supervisors and co-workers, and responding appropriately to work pressures in usual work settings and to changes in a routine work setting. Although testimony was obtained from the VE before Dr. Conran's evaluation was conducted, the hypothetical question counsel gave to the VE at the hearing mirrored Dr. Conran's later findings. In considering the hypothetical question, the VE testified that all work would be concluded, record at page 369. The ALJ never rejected the VE's testimony. The commissioners argue that it was reasonable for the ALJ to interpret Dr. Conran's report as permitting unskilled work. However, the ALJ does not explain why he equated Dr. Conran's findings with an ability to perform unskilled work. Taken in the light of the VE's testimony, there is no logical bridge from the report to the ALJ's finding. Second, the commissioner's argument is not supported by her own rules. In the commissioner's brief at pages 28 to 29, she cites SSR 8515. SSR 8515 notes that an individual must be able to respond appropriately to supervision, coworkers, and usual work situations, and be able to deal with changes in a routine work setting. However, any substantial loss of ability to meet any of these requirements will greatly impact the ability to perform unskilled work. In fact, according to SSR 8515, the rule cited by the commissioner, a substantial loss of ability in any one of those categories justifies a finding of disability. Dr. Conran's mental RFC assessment specifically stated that Ms. Sutton experiences moderate limitations in all of those categories, which is inconsistent with the ALJ's determination that Ms. Sutton can perform unskilled work. In the commissioner's brief at pages 31 to 32, she discusses the definition of moderate in Dr. Conran's report. This is irrelevant in post hoc rationalization. The ALJ engaged in no discussion of the term moderate in his decision. The true issue here is the ALJ accepted Dr. Conran's report, he accepted the VE's testimony, and the combination of the two do not equal unskilled work. To the contrary, they equal no jobs being available. Second, the ALJ's credibility determination was erroneous. Not all of Ms. Sutton's painful spinal abnormalities were resolved by the spinal fusion. Ms. Sutton had residual problems uncorrected by the operation, including degenerative end plate spurring at C5, C6, with additional documented complaints of pain, tenderness, and observed muscle spasms. Therefore, Ms. Sutton did have remaining underlying conditions that were reasonably related to her complaints of pain. Ms. Sutton's limited activities of daily living do not undermine her complaints either. An ability to go grocery shopping with assistance does not translate into an ability to perform full-time competitive work. Even the ALJ recognized this during the hearing, noting that Ms. Sutton performs her chores at her own pace. Finally, Ms. Sutton's continued unsuccessful search for work should not be an issue. She was never successful in obtaining work. And an attempt to find work is relevant only to motivation. Bartel v. Cohen, 349 F3D 434. Here the motivation is clear. Ms. Sutton first applied for disability benefits in 2001. She waited 16 months for a hearing. During this time, she was evicted from her apartment. Her search for work is only human. It's not indicative of a true ability to work. Third, the ALJ failed to address Sutton's morbid obesity. Obesity not only affects the RFC, or what an individual can do physically, lifting, walking, sitting, standing, but it should also be considered in the credibility of an individual's statements regarding their limitations. Despite SSR 021P's requirement that the ALJ explain his decisions or his determinations regarding obesity at step two, the discussion of obesity is simply not included, and obesity is not even included as a severe impairment. In fact, there is no discussion of obesity anywhere in the decision. Ms. Sutton has spinal abnormalities.
Well, but that's sort of related to the last case, with the observations of the ALJ. She's he could see that she's, what was she, 5'6", 5'7", and 240 pounds or something like that.
Right. She has a BMI of 37.3, which is over the threshold for obesity. And although that might not seem especially large on paper, when she went in for the spinal fusion, the procedure had to be canceled and rescheduled because they noted she was so large they could not visualize her spine on the X-ray. So it's hard to tell without having her here today, but apparently her size was an issue when it came to medical procedures. And if the ALJ had looked at her at the hearing and thought, well, she isn't that large, then he should have said so in his decision. The problem here is there's no discussion of it whatsoever.
Was it raised by her?
Yes, it was raised in the brief. It was raised in several pre-hearing and post-hearing submissions to the ALJ. We had specifically cited the rule regarding obesity, SSR 021P, including her BMI, which is above the obesity threshold.
Well, that's technical language. Tell me what that... what you just said means.
I'm sorry. Yes, the ALJ was advised that obesity is an issue in this case. He was given a portion of the relevant rule concerning obesity and was notified that he should be evaluating whether it's a severe or more than a minimal impairment and how it affects her ability to function. So he was advised before the hearing, he was advised after the hearing, and despite that, there's no discussion of it in his decision. At the hearing, the VE was also asked to give his opinion as a vocational rehabilitation counselor, considering the record as a whole. And the VE testified that the number of physical and mental issues she's dealing with are considerable, and it seems like an inordinate number of problems she's dealing with, record at 371. This indicates that the ALJ's failure to consider obesity in conjunction with the spinal abnormalities and depression was harmful error. In addition, returning to the mental limitations, here we have a hypothetical question that specifically included all of the moderates. And we know that when the moderates from the credited report are incorporated, there are no jobs that Ms. Sutton can perform. So therefore, you could compare this case with Young versus Barnhart and Kosarski versus Barnhart, where the matter was remanded for the relevant limitations to be included in the hypothetical. Here we know the outcome. We know the outcome is there are no jobs when the ALJ incorporates moderate limitations from the report he credited. So in this case, in fact, reversal with directions for an award of benefits would even be merited because we already know that when the ALJ factors in the report he did credit, there are no jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Slipnitz?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ann Lipnitz, and I'm here on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security, and I'm asking the court to affirm the ALJ's decision in this case because it is supported by substantial evidence in the record. I'd like to work
back. The
main
points that the appellant seems to make involve the mental impairments of Sutton. What's your response to that? There's some pretty broad statements here about she's mentally impaired to the point where she can't do these things that were testified to as to her capability to do them.
Yes, Your Honor. There are basically
that seems to be the main problem here is the mental side.
Yes, I believe that's plaintiff's strongest argument. But in this case, we have three opinions regarding her mental capabilities as related to work-related limitations. The first is from her treating physician, Dr. Pena, who's a primary care physician, but who treated her for many years for her complaints of depression. He treated her medically with Zoloft and other antipsychotic medications. He opined after treating her for 3 years that she had no work-related limitations as related to her mental impairments. The second opinion is from Dr. Conran, which was a consultative examination which was ordered by the ALJ following the administrative hearing. The result of Dr. Conran's report was that she could function satisfactorily in all work-related areas of functioning. Now, I know that plaintiff believes she's entitled to greater limitations because Dr. Conran found that she had some moderate limitations in certain areas of functioning. However, Dr. Conran defined a moderate limitation as a limitation in which a person could still function satisfactorily in that area on a sustained basis, meaning 8 hours a day for 5 days a week. Therefore, the ALJ could reasonably consider Dr. Pena's opinion, who had treated her over a long time for her complaints of depression, and Dr. Conran's consultative exam, which found that she could sustain an 8-hour workday 5 days a week and function satisfactorily in all the areas of work-related functioning. The only conflicting evidence is Dr. Tilken's opinion. Now, Dr. Tilken apparently began treating plaintiff sometime in early 2003. That's our best guess, and that seems to be based on plaintiff's testimony. But there really was no evidence to support that claim of an ongoing treatment relationship. Moreover, Dr. Tilken declined to provide any clinical or objective findings for her opinion that plaintiff would require being absent from work 4 days out of the month. That certainly was very inconsistent with her own treating physician's opinion. And there was certainly no basis to reject the other physician's opinions of record based on Dr. Tilken's opinion in this case. There was also substantial evidence in the record regarding plaintiff's daily activities. She was able to leave the house every day. She drove, she took the bus, and she walked to do errands to actively seek work. These are all in her statements of her daily activities. She visited friends, she did laundry, she grocery shopped, she cared for herself and her home. And so there really was no evidence. There's no evidence that she was ever psychiatrically hospitalized, that she ever decompensated because of mental limitations in this case. And so, you know, really we're looking at, was the ALJ reasonable in looking at all of this evidence and saying she can perform unskilled work, which is...
There was agreement that she suffered from apparently depression in a major way, wasn't there? Depression was the main psychiatric...
Absolutely, and I believe that Dr. Pena is the doctor who, her primary care physician, who diagnosed that and who treated her with Zoloft for many years. And when that became ineffective, he changed her medications and found something that she testified at the hearing was actually more effective than the Zoloft previously was. And Dr. Pena, who was the person who originally diagnosed the depression, found that she had no work-related limitations as a result of her psychological impairments. I think that plaintiff wants to say that Dr. Conran's definition of moderate in this case, I think, is what she said was meaningless. I don't think that is a reasonable way to look at the evidence. The ALJ had Dr. Conran's form to consider. He had the way that Dr. Conran defined moderate. And he could reasonably think that a person who can function satisfactorily in all these areas and dealing with others and responding to supervisors could perform the limited demands of unskilled work, which is very simple work. It needs little judgment to do very simple duties, assembly line work, order clerk, those types of skills. And there really wasn't any clinical evidence that she had greater limitations than the ALJ found with regard to her mental limitations.
What about the obesity issue that counsel raised?
Right. The ALJ, first of all, specifically cited plaintiff's weight and height in his decision and obviously was aware of her obesity, saw her at the administrative hearing. In addition, there are two physician opinions of record in this case, her treating physicians, who are obviously aware of her obesity, who found that she could perform light work. And even more compelling is her demonstrated ability to perform light work in a functional capacity evaluation, which was administered by a physical therapist, in which she demonstrated the ability to perform light work on a sustained basis. And so, you know, her plaintiff's contention, although, you know, the way the ruling is written, a person's obesity should be factored into her ability to perform daily activities, but it does not necessarily indicate that a person is limited. And in this case, certainly the evidence showed that she was not limited despite her obesity. In this case, certainly not to the point that she could not perform light work. With regard to the ALJ's credibility finding in this case, what is supported by substantial evidence and should be affirmed, the ALJ gave good reasons for finding that Ms. Sutton was not credible in this case. First of all, there were large inconsistencies with the medical evidence and her own subjective complaints. Secondly, her testimony was very inconsistent with her reports of daily activities. At one point, Ms. Sutton testified that she needed to nap every 2 hours, and yet her daily activity sheet showed that she left home every day, she drove, she did errands. It's very hard to envision a person doing that and still coming home and napping every 2 hours. That's just one example. And moreover, she could do yard work. She testified that she could care for her home. I mean, she had quite extensive activities, and the ALJ could consider that as evidence that her complaints were not entirely credible. And finally, he did consider that she continued to actively seek employment and, in fact, did go back to work for a brief period of time during her claimed period of disability, at least as evidence that she had a subjective belief that she was able to work despite her allegations of pain, ongoing pain. Therefore, based on the evidence as a whole, we believe the ALJ's decision is supported by substantial evidence in the record, specifically by the two treating physicians of record and the functional capacity evaluation, as well as the lack of medical signs and the clinical evidence, which showed that she had normal strength, sensation, reflexes, no abnormalities of gait, station, or dexterity. Does the court have any other questions?
Thanks. So, thank you, Ms. Lifnitz. You have 1 minute, counsel.
Regarding Ms. Sutton's mental impairments, the commissioner sort of sidesteps the fact that the ALJ sent Ms. Sutton out for Dr. Conran's evaluation. He adopted Dr. Conran's report, and the moderate limitations in Dr. Conran's report, when combined with the VE testimony, lead to a finding of disability. The ALJ never explains why he finds she can do unskilled work, and the commissioner still hasn't explained that. We can forget Dr. Tilkin's report. We can forget Dr. Pena's report, which were rejected by the ALJ anyway. The crux of the matter is he accepted Dr. Conran's report and failed to explain how, in the context of that, Ms. Sutton's still not disabled. Regarding Dr. Pena, he only treated Ms. Sutton early on. He diagnosed her. And the note is from January of 2002. However, by later that year, she was being taken care of. By December 10th, 2002, she was being treated at Cook County Hospital under Dr. Tylkin, as record 270. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.